DW. Dolphins, whales, manatees, sea turtles, crocodiles, skates, lionfish, doctor fish, clownfish, whelks, sea feathers and white-bellied sea eagles. They all live in and around the Great Barrier Reef. Stretching for 2,300 kilometres along the east coast of Australia, it's the world's biggest reef system and the only living organism visible from space, created by tiny corals. From Townsville, a city in North Queensland, you can reach this UNESCO World Natural Heritage Site in 2.5 hours by boat, or you can visit by plane, like marine biologist Terry Hughes did 2 years ago after one of the most severe outbreaks of coral bleaching ever.
We flew over nearly 1,200 reefs between the Torres Straits and the southern tip of the Great Barrier Reef. It took 11 flights, about 8 hours of flying a day. It was quite grueling and exhausting and emotional.
That's how he recalled it in a TV interview.
Because we saw hundreds of reefs that were incredibly badly damaged. Experiments where people really torture corals, you know, they put them into +4 degrees centigrade. The sickest corals we've ever seen.
His findings at the time sounded depressing. Now, 2 years later, the director of the Australian Centre for Coral Reef Research sits at his desk at the James Cook University of Townsville, and he's no more optimistic.
My colleagues and I have been very busy in the last few years looking at the impacts of global warming on the Great Barrier Reef, which have been quite devastating. So in 2016 and 2017, we had record-breaking sea temperatures on the Great Barrier Reef, which were very destructive.
If the water is too warm, the algae, which live on the coral and give it its colour and are necessary for its survival, suffer. The symbiosis between corals and algae is disrupted, and the system takes at least 10 years to recover. But because oceans continue to warm up and marine heat waves increase, Terry Hughes is worried there won't be enough time until the next bleaching event. And now there are even more frightening reports. In the worst-case scenario, the rising temperatures could completely kill the coral animal as well, according to scientists at the University of New South Wales, like Tracy Ainsworth. Already the coral is very brittle. Their observations have shown complete sections dying and breaking off, dissolving irretrievably from the underlying coral skeleton. Sometimes the corals die after only 10 days of higher water temperatures, and it's the breakneck speed of this destruction that's the really important finding of this research. The new phenomenon shows the change caused by climate change, a warning signal that's as clear as a canary in a mine falling off its perch because there's not enough oxygen. A warning that must be urgently heeded, say scientists like Terry Hughes.
The only way to secure a long-term future for the world's coral reefs is to deal with greenhouse gas emissions. That is the root cause. So the Australian government has responded in various ways to the public concern over the loss of so many corals on the Great Barrier Reef in just a handful of recent years. But the elephant in the room remains global warming and climate change.
The results of the parliamentary elections in May 2019 have not improved the situation. The majority of Australians voted once again for a government that doesn't trust renewable energy and regards warnings about climate change as alarmist.
Our Australian government still supports the expansion of the fossil fuel industry, new coal mines, more fracking for methane gas, coal seam gas throughout Australia. And that, to my mind, is a complete policy failure in terms of adequate stewardship of the Great Barrier Reef.
The economy is the driving factor. Jobs now beats reefs in the future. Australia's mineral resources, especially in Queensland, are an important part of that, explains Michael McMillan, former Enterprises Policy and Investment Director in Townsville.
If you look historically at what regional Queensland represents as far as what its economic pillars are, mining and resources and agriculture are those two key pillars. If we are to lose one of those through, an environmentally driven or emphasised agenda, that will have a significant impact economically across the north, but also to the state and federal government's royalties and taxes in relation to the resource sector as well.
The argument about mining creating jobs is not convincing, says Wendy Tubman. On the contrary, she says, and statistical data supports that. The number of jobs in the coal industry is likely to remain very low, and for new mines, workers from other regions are brought in. On the other hand, the number of jobs created by the coral reef are much higher, Tubman says.
Well, the Great Barrier Reef, and there was a survey done by a major consulting firm, and they said that the reef employs in the order of 64,000 people, way more than the mining industry in Australia, in Queensland. And it brings in something in the order of $7 billion a year. So, and that's forever. That's every year. It's not just until the price drops or until we stop mining coal. That's forever.
The climate activist wears a T-shirt and matching earrings carrying her battle cry, Stop Adani. Adani is the name here in Queensland that draws both pro-coal supporters and anti-coal opponents. That's because the Indian mining concern is planning to build the largest coal mine in the world, the Carmichael Mine, in the Galilee Basin region of Queensland. Supporters see the thousands of jobs promised by the company. Opponents fear that this new mine will be only the first of many in the basin. They fear destruction of nature and the climate. The federal government has already given its early approval for the mine, but the state took a long time in its considerations. Adani had to revise its plans for the protection of threatened animals. The mine site is the habitat for the most significant known remaining population of the black-throated finch, a species that is listed as endangered. The coal firm also had to revise its plans for groundwater management. In June, Queensland's Environment Minister made this announcement.
Today, the regulator has informed Adani that following many years of work, the Groundwater Dependent Ecosystem Management Plan has met the environmental conditions required by its environmental authority and has been approved. In granting this
order,
it's clearly an emotionally charged subject, as Minister Leanne Enoch also found out.
Assessment of the groundwater plan has been subject to a thorough scientific process. At times, the robustness of the process has attracted criticism from those in the media and the community who would have liked a quicker decision.
The process took 9 years, in which time the effects of climate change have become much clearer than at the start of the Adani plan. Opponents say coal is the energy of yesterday, and supporters, including Michael McMillan, fear that international firms will stop investing in Australia if the prolonged case becomes the norm. They claim that environmentalists are deliberately obstructive, but Environment Minister Enoch says it's important to be thorough.
But, Speaker, the people of Queensland have a right to expect that the government takes a responsible approach to environmental protection, upholds the law, and supports decisions based on the best available science.
Yeah.
Our state has some of the most rigorous environmental protections in the country, and we do not apologise for that.
Yeah.
For the opponents of the mine, the decision couldn't have been worse. Many apologised to the world via Facebook for their greedy, corrupt government. Prime Minister Scott Morrison had already isolated himself at a meeting of Pacific nations. South Sea countries like Tuvalu, Vanuatu, Fiji or Kiribati, all of which are threatened the most by climate change, wanted a decisive declaration. Strong measures against the climate crisis were originally demanded, a worldwide ban on new coal plants and coal mines. But in the final declaration of the meeting, there was no mention of coal. Australia insisted on this, but also risked alienating its neighbours. It actually wanted to achieve the opposite result, to guard against China's influence in the Pacific, a thorny problem and hard to solve. Tuvalu's Prime Minister told reporters that he had told his Australian counterpart, "For you, it's about saving your economy. For me, it's about saving my people from destruction." On that score, he can count on Wendy Tubman's full support. The environmental activist says the government's arguments are based on short-term thinking.
You can't have a strong economy if your environment has gone to pieces. It just won't happen. Now, a lot of our politicians say, oh, yes, OK, well, we will transition sometime down the future. But it is such a critical time. It's like, you know, when war broke out in Europe, no one sat around saying, well, we're not ready yet.
she sees no need for new coal mines. She doesn't want her country to continue being the world champion coal exporter. However, Michael McMillan believes India should get its coal from Australia.
Just because this mine doesn't go ahead, this will not be a silver bullet for global warming. If this coal is not purchased here in Australia, it will be purchased from somewhere else.
The Great Barrier Reef is World Heritage, and it is our duty and our responsibility to look after it, and we're not. We're killing it for the sake of a few tonnes of coal.
Wendy Tubman and Michael McMillan couldn't have more different points of view. Indeed, their city, Townsville, has both. The regional office of the Adani Mining Concern is located here. But in and around Townsville, 39 power stations that produce renewable energy already exist or are being built, especially solar farms. The sun is the state's greatest strength, the Governor of Queensland points out. It doesn't need any more coal-fired power stations. How does that square with the Adani mine? A mine is not a power station, and the coal from Adani is earmarked for export. Just 200 kilometres south of Townsville, wagon after wagon, full of coal, rolls along the tracks to the harbour. Abbott Point is the name of the deep water harbour in the Coral Sea. The pier extends a kilometre into the blue water. That's according to aerial photographs. You can't actually visit the harbour. It's privately owned by the Adani Group, and the access road is closed. 50 million tonnes of coal can be loaded here annually. The ships travel through the Great Barrier Reef. Adani wants to enlarge the harbour because the output from the planned largest coal mine in the world would also be transported from here. One early morning last November, Greg Rollins, an inconspicuous 37-year-old with thinning red blonde hair, took three metal rods.
I went up a tripod just about 10 k's out of town at Mount Buckley and we stopped the coal trains for 3 hours I was up there.
In court, Greg Rollins pleads not guilty. His protest was self-defence, he explains before the hearing.
I took the action that I took because we are in the middle of a climate emergency. Our very home is under threat. Governments have failed to consistently for decades have failed to act, and we need to take non-violent direct action if we are to save and protect our home.
Accompanying Greg to court are a dozen other activists. They belong to the Australian Christ for Climate, Frontline Action on Coal, or Knitting Nanas, who protest in public spaces by lightly rattling their knitting needles. The climate activists are aged from 18 to 80. They are all concerned about the future and stopping new coal mines. Many of them live in a camp a few kilometres from the main town. In the workshop, a climate activist is painting a protest banner. Former physics teacher Shane Primrose is there.
The government corruption is quite apparent. It becomes a necessary step to come into spaces that allow for civil disobedience, because it's quite clear that we're not going to get the change that we need through the existing channels and through existing government policies.
So they are not only blocking railway lines, they are also putting sandbags in front of the office of a local MP who supports coal to protect it from rising sea levels. Shane Primrose is totally in favour of civil disobedience. He sees it as a duty and a chance, together with others at the camp, to influence public opinion.
When you have an understanding of this emergency and how drastic it is and how desperately we need to change, really had a great desire to be able to spread a message further and to more people more quickly.
Since the Adani mine was approved, the environment activists have been organising new protests. Blockade Adani is their slogan. They want to stop the construction and site clearance work that is just beginning with blockades. Supporters are coming from all over Australia to do what, in their opinion, politics has failed to do. Not far from the coal opponents' camp lies Collinsville, a coal town. It calls itself Australia's Pit Pony Capital. The local pub is called Pit Pony Tavern. Safety vests for construction, mine and daily workers are a common form of attire. The museum lets visitors experience the origins, the difficulties and the successes of coal mining, the coal face experience. And just like in a film, men with coal-blackened faces enter the pub and play pool. The front page of the local newspaper carries a proud slogan: New mine, new jobs. When last summer a convoy of anti-coal campaigners travelled through Australia with the motto Stop Adani, the residents didn't give them a very cordial reception. In some pubs and supermarkets, anti-Adani protesters weren't served drinks or groceries. In the eyes of the locals, the environmental supporters are enemies of the economy. The mine brings jobs and also apprenticeships for young people. When the green light was given for Adani, locals celebrated, and pub owners in the mining towns shouted rounds of drinks to celebrate the best news for years as they saw it. A big blow, on the other hand, for the activists in the camp, like 52-year-old Sooty.
Yes, you wonder how, if they've got children, how they can just ignore the fact that, sure, it's, you know, it's going to help them at the moment, you know, good money, help the kids, you know, in the short term, but they're going to leave the kids a massive problem in the future.
A difficult dilemma, as the Christian climate activist Greg Rowland says.
There's going to be no jobs on a dead planet.
There are no jobs on a dead planet, and a dead reef doesn't attract any tourists. But perhaps what's happening in the mining town of Collinsville is a good sign. Directly across from the old coal plant, a big photovoltaic project is emerging, and the first solar panels are already feeding energy into the electricity grid. Australia has lots of coal, but even more sunshine.
DW.